Okay, let me officially welcome everyone to tonight's call. This is Momentum Mastery Monthly, and this is our success call for the month of April. And I am once again so excited about our topic for today. It always seems that whatever topic is in our lineup is the one that I am most excited about. And today we are really going to be talking about extreme self-care for high achievers. So what does it really take to create a space for you to thrive? What does it take to create a space for you to fully express yourself? What does it take to create a space for you to fully be you at your best? Of course, sustainable success doesn't happen when we're running on fumes, when we're gasping for oxygen, and we're saying yes to absolutely everything without discernment. So we really want to turn up the volume and focus in on your self-care because it absolutely matters. It's absolutely one of the keys to our power and to our connection with who we are when we're at our best. So here's what we've got on the lineup here for tonight. We're going to be really making you a priority. We're going to be looking at what it really takes to create a space for you to thrive, why self-care should be a must for you if it's not already, what happens when you ignore essential self-care practices, and of course, some of you are on this call because perhaps you've been neglecting this and you actually know what happens when you ignore self-care practices. We're going to invite you to take inventory of the single most important relationship in your life, and that's the one you have with yourself. And we're going to really explore, this is a real big one, when and how to set critical boundaries in your life. This isn't about being a pushover and saying yes, yes, yes to everything. This is really being clear about, you know, where's the yes and where's the no. And we're going to invite you to make three commitments to up the ante on your own self-care. So to kick off our conversation today, and I'm going to be tapping into our live listening audience here in a minute. I see many of you here on the line. And as our place to get started is really with the question, well, yeah, what's one way that you were kind and loving to yourself last week? What's one way that you were kind and loving to yourself last week? And as you're thinking about that and taking inventory, hopefully you're not going, not so much, Mary. Hopefully that's not the case. But I want to just take a moment right here and remind everybody that there is a commitment contest that is going on, taking place between now and June 1st, where you have the opportunity to win a free ticket to the Inner Peace Immersion Retreat. There are several people that I can see are clearly in contention for this already, but there's still quite a bit of time between now and June 1st, and it really is about showing up. So each week I am sending out the weekly focus form. If you're connected in with the Momentum Now forum, you'll see that you're receiving an opportunity to check in, take inventory of your progress each week, take inventory on how you've supported your connection to inner peace, and really recommit to what you want to focus on over the coming week. So I invite you to take those and post those in the forum. Many of you are already doing that. I want to encourage more of you to do that. It's absolutely one of the keys to what keeps me on track, keeps me connected. And you know, we all have those moments where we get off track, and this is one tool that can help you get back on track week in, week out. So, and you may even want to just fill out that form for yourself. I personally think there's something even a bit more powerful to have other people witness it. It sort of makes it a little bit more visible and punctuates that much more. So let's circle back to our topic for today around extreme self-care for high achievers. And I'm going to open up the lines here to our live listening audience. Hello, all of you. And let's just throw out the question, you know, what's one way that you were kind and loving to yourself last week? One, how about I'll lead with this one. I'll give you a few ideas. Actually, timing is good because one of the things I did for myself was a two-hour massage last night. I love, love, love Massage Envy, that a monthly membership for massage sort of forces you to go every single month. I kind of like to go and then add an extra hour because, well, it's extra good that way. Going to bed early is a kind and loving thing that I did for myself last night, or sleeping in. Some of you may know I had food poisoning last week. Oh, what fun that is. The second half of the week. So one of the things I did was really go easy on myself when that happened, canceled what I could from my schedule, and really just allowed myself to process through that with the beloved chicken broth. And on my birthday last week, really allowed myself to take the day off and not load it up with coaching appointments as I had originally thought that I would be doing. So who else would jump in and share? How are you kind and loving to yourself last week?
This is Michael.
Yeah, Michael.
Hi.
Hi.
I put time aside and spent time with a friend.
Beautiful. Time with friends, very loving, nurturing thing to do. We social creatures love that. Who else? What's something you did last week, one way that you were kind and loving to yourself?
Hey, Mary, Stephanie.
Hey, Stephanie.
Last week I went to a seminar that really allowed me to tap back into my inner purpose and my motivation.
Nice. Yeah, anything we do in support of that connection with ourselves, very kind and loving. Anyone else that would like to chime in on that? One way that you were kind and loving to yourself last week? Okay. Well, let me just throw out some other ideas that have come from past group calls much like this, things that people have said. 6 days at the gym, getting 8 to 9 hours of sleep consistently, and 1 hour of 11 hours of sleep. Went to two of her favorite yoga classes. Pulling herself off the dance floor for a little rest before her feet were super tired. Oh, 3 days of dance camp. Playing and visiting with friends throughout the weekend. Leaving the alarm clock off. There's a good one. Here's another one. Not pushing herself. Some other good ones. Eating well. Went off a full week, no sugar. So there's just a few other ideas there. So we're talking about this whole idea of self-care. So why should we really focus on self-care? Before I throw out a bunch of answers and so forth, let's just draw from those of you that are here on the line. Why should we focus on self-care? Isn't it selfish? Is it, you know, is it right to really put ourselves first? Why should we do that?
Is Michael?
Yeah, Michael.
Because if you don't take care of yourself, you won't be around tomorrow to take care of others.
Right. Isn't that the truth? So, so true.
You know, a lot of people are really committed to taking care of others to their own at their own expense.
Mm-hmm.
And they really need to realize that, hey, you know, you reach a certain point where you're not in charge of your body, and your body is going to take charge, and you're going to have to listen to your body.
Yep, right. It's very, very, very true. Like we
as you may have experienced last week with the food poisoning.
Right, exactly. I'm always reminded my health is generally really, really good. I eat well. I got my vegetable smoothies daily. I exercise consistently. I get good sleep. And boy, oh boy, when I don't have energy and I'm not feeling well, my compassion for people that have to deal with some kind of chronic disease, pain, health challenge really comes out, because I really see how difficult it is to do anything when that baseline of self-care isn't there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another one is I've noticed that when I practice self-care, it makes it a whole lot easier to love yourself.
Right. And it's really what comes first. Does the self-care come first or the self-love? Or does the self-love help perpetuate the self-care?
That's an interesting question.
Right? It's almost a symbiotic relationship. If we're missing one, can we really have the other? And it also is a way about how we teach the universe to treat us. If we're really taking good care of ourselves, a lot of what we get reflected back to us in our world are things that support our self-care, more invitations to do things that are nurturing. And we're going to attract experiences that are going to elicit other caring and nurturing things. Well, add a few others. One is in staying in our power, right? If we're running on fumes, as many high achievers do, ultimately there comes a place when if we're only running on adrenaline, and I have this conversation with one of my high-achieving clients almost weekly, but when we're running and just going, working these 80, even 90-hour work weeks, and, you know, exhaustion, when you come walking through the door to greet the kids, it's like, well, there's not much energy available. And we're literally wiring our bodies, and we've got our bodies in a permanent state of kind of that fight or flight. And it's very easy to get your buttons pushed from this place, whether it's with a client or a spouse or children. So really this self-care is one of the greatest ways to nurture that place of power. One of the gals in one of the other group programs, Gail, who's often here on the call, was sharing how she, over the last several weeks, has really made a strong commitment to self-care. And by putting herself first, by doing things like meditation and really focusing on getting to sleep and really focusing on eating well, has begun to attract opportunities and more friendships and community and support through the rest of her life. It's sort of almost seems backwards. Instead of doing more, if we come back and actually be more, kind of back to putting that oxygen mask on ourselves first, we're much more available to go create. Our energy vibration is higher.
Well, you're really making room in your life to experience all these things.
Absolutely.
Hey, Mary, this is Carol.
Yeah.
I'm going to throw one in here.
Great.
So from a health perspective, you know, when we're doing things that are pleasurable for us, we are creating more nitric oxide in our blood vessels. And nitric oxide is the, like, uber transmitter that controls and regulates all of the other neurotransmitters. And it's what is responsible for vasodilation. And so we are actually boosting our immune system. And, you know, that's why, like, laughter is good for us. Everyone knows that, but they're not quite sure why. And it's because of this nitric oxide flood that is rushing through our body and dilating all of our blood vessels from head to toe. So that's a good thing.
I love it. Like the real scientific reason for self-care. Thank you for bringing into the what it's doing for us chemically inside.
Yeah, sure.
Absolutely. Anything else? You know, why else should we focus on self-care? A few other things that others have said, life is easier. We tend to be more happy and more peaceful. It allows us to develop our gifts more. We can put things in perspective when we're really in a place of self-care. I can tell you last week when I was lying miserably on my bed, like, oh, you know, those are the days when I want to throw in the whole coaching business and, you know, retire as America's inner peace coach. It always happens, and I have to sort of, you know, hit myself on the head. This is really not the best place to make these kinds of decisions, right? And, of course, today I'm totally happy and energized about my business and excited about what I'm taking on. So I have those momentary bleeps, but I almost always notice it happens when I'm running on a deficit. Certainly, self-care is the place for us to thrive. It gives us the place to fully express ourselves and really, really be our best. And it also really allows us to be 100% present for others. I use the example of one of my clients who is working in a very stressful job, in a sales role with a very difficult client, high demands, high pressures, and then comes home to a demanding household. And very difficult for him to be fully present when he's not stopping to give himself that basic self-care. So let's talk a little bit with our live listening audience here. What happens when you don't take care of yourself? So really step into your own experience, not the funnest question to ponder, but when you really aren't taking care of yourself, what happens?
Hey, Mary. So for me, it usually shows up when I'm doing a lot of shifts back to back, and inevitably I end up sick, run down, really dragging on fumes and very little energy.
Yeah. Low energy, getting to the point of sick, run down, reminds me of another one of my clients who, prior to working with me, actually worked herself to the point of having to go to the hospital. And not Stephanie in the capacity that you work in the hospital as a doctor and physician, but literally because she would wear down her system so badly that she would need to go and get hospital support. Of course, that was the reason her employer hired me, and we've kept her out of the hospital, and mostly out of sick days. Good. And Michael, you're going to chime in. What happens when you don't take care of yourself?
Well, one of the things that happens is, as the person just previous to me said, I get sick. But another thing that, for me, self-care, a big part of self-care is making sure that there's enough room in my life for me to think.
Mm-hmm.
And when life gets busy and hectic, and everything's go, 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 I find that my stress level starts going up, my patience starts going down, and I just notice that I really need that time, that space to just think about things.
Uh-huh.
And talking about things is very important to me also. I'm a verbal processor. And if I don't make an effort to go and find somebody to talk with on a regular basis, again, my stress level starts going up and I don't make it as good decisions either.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I may make poor decisions.
Right, right. So you're pointing to, so many here. Stress up, patience down, not having time to think, not making good, clear decisions.
Yes, fortunately, I'm very good at making space in my life.
Yeah. Well, and we can tell, right, when the self-care is going below the certain level. I know one of the ways for me is all of a sudden little innocent things that my husband does become annoying. Like, I know it's not him because given a normal day when I'm fully oxygenated, I've got lots of self-care going on, I'm nourished inside, then whatever's going on with him actually is irrelevant. It actually just adds to what's going on and it's neutral. But when I'm, you know, the more I'm running on fumes, that becomes my little signal. Ah, if I'm feeling annoyed, maybe it's more about my connection to me and a deficit in the self-care department.
Yeah, self-care is kind of like housekeeping.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't, you know, keep things, you know, from getting past a certain point, at some point it becomes overwhelming, and then you have to kind of dig yourself out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when it becomes the big struggle.
Yep. Much more challenging.
And in fact, with depression, one of the things that happens is that the longer you're in a state of depression, the longer it takes for you to get out of it, because your body, your mind, everything has been so used to being in that state for such a long time.
Mm-hmm.
It almost becomes normal, and then you can't understand, why am I having such a hard time getting out of that?
Mm-hmm. Life becomes more of a drag.
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes self-perpetuating.
And it all starts where?
All starts with, we'll call it that metaphorical oxygen mask. Self-care first.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm. What else might we add to this list of what happens when you don't take care of yourself? Maybe self-sabotage. Maybe start showing up late to things. Dropping the ball. Paying attention. Somebody once referred to it as stinky piles. Piles accumulating.
If you haven't been cleaning up diapers.
Right. That's right. Maybe you could potentially be hurting others. Now, as you get more burnt out and less attentive, other people around you who also are looking to get their needs met and maybe looking to you as their source of connection, may get really hurt. And, you know, could end up having an impact, too, on your sex life. Maybe whether that's not feeling sexy or girly or just having the energy, whether you're male or female. Hopefully the guys aren't feeling girly, but, you know, you never know who's listening, right? And maybe another one is even around gaining weight. All right, so like attracts like. When we're not taking care of ourselves, it tends to be that downward spiral. Okay, so let's look at this next question. It's like, I know that was a really fun question, one we want to avoid, but it's good to take a few minutes and really connect what happens when we don't take care of ourselves, because this is really the leverage, and especially for high achievers, really the leverage for us to make that commitment to up the ante. One thing I know about high achievers is there tends to be a little bit of that superman, superwoman complex that rests inside, you know, I can handle it, I don't need that much sleep, I don't need food, I don't need water, I don't need rest, I can just keep on going. And it's almost like you hear like dogs. Some dogs, if you just leave food out, will just continue to eat, and they don't really know when to turn that off. I guess some dogs can self-monitor themselves, but many, many dogs will just eat to the point of really harming themselves physically without having that internal stop point that, you know, this is enough. And that metaphor translates to our high achiever friends here on the listening line. that we really need to be mindful and stop. It goes against every grain of a high achiever's mind, body, spirit, soul to actually slow down and really put yourself first. So let's check in with this question, and that is, what's your relationship to you? And this is a big question to ponder. Now, what do you love about you? What are you still working on loving about you? If you were to describe your relationship with your best friend, you may have certain words and qualities that you would use to describe that. And if instead of describing a relationship with a friend or with a parent or a child, what is your relationship with you? Take that question and turn it around. You know, are you a slave driver? Are you more of a cheerleader for yourself? Do you push yourself so hard? Are you stingy and dishing out acknowledgement and appreciation and encouragement? Are you your best friend? Are you looking out for you and surrounding yourself by people and experiences that nurture and support you and give yourself work that you love and you're passionate about? I had one person in a course years ago say, when she got to this question, it was a very big shocker for her. She's like, oh my gosh, it's very superficial. You know, sort of just, kind of just tolerate and not really even pay much attention and go into depth and really getting to know this being of who she was. And for her, in this particular course, this was one of the biggest breakthroughs for her was, oh my gosh, my relationship with myself is superficial. So really check in. Now, what is it for you? And here's another possibility. Is there a split personality? Maybe you have a real confident side and a way that you really do take care of yourself, and then you've got another side that is maybe more like self-hatred or being your own worst enemy. So lots of possibilities, and I know there's, on this line, we probably have, for every person on the line, there's a different type of relationship. Each relationship with ourselves is very personal. And I'd love to hear, for those of you that would be willing to share, what's your relationship to you?
I love myself.
Yay!
So get more, down to it.
Yeah, say more about that. So take
I love myself. I think I'm wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
I love that I'm very patient, and I love that I'm very accepting of others. I love that I feel like I can do anything.
Mm.
Although sometimes I do find that I'm the cause of what's holding me back.
Mm-hmm.
As well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So it sounds like there's also a lot of honesty in the relationship. You know, that you're very encouraging and supportive. Hey, you can do anything. And sometimes you notice that, wow, you know, I can get my own way. So that's honest. And then there's an opportunity to set a new path.
I'm still discovering the honesty.
Mm-hmm.
I realized only in the last few years that I went through a number of years where I didn't really pay attention and ask myself, am I really being honest about this? Is this really what I believe? And I ended up with a whole bunch of beliefs that were unfounded or stories that I would tell myself. And over the last few years, it's been an interesting experience to rediscover myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I like what I'm discovering.
Really nice. So I see also really healthy curiosity about who you are. And it's not a know-it-all. Yeah, I've got the relationship down, but a process of discovery and continue to look, a real willingness to throw out the stories that don't check out in reality, willingness to check out the stories, find out what's real or not.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
Yeah. Really nice. Really nice. Who wants to be willing to share? What's your relationship with you?
Hey, Mary Stephanie.
Hey, Stephanie.
I too love myself, but I also look at myself as a work in progress.
Mm-hmm.
With each day gaining more and more clarity around what it is that I want to create in my life, and then making those choices that support that. So, whereas I think in the past there was a time when I saw, I guess, the glass more half empty. I see the glass more as half full. That it's just a process.
Yeah. Love that. And I really hear in that gentleness with yourself,
mm-hmm.
you know, a real willingness to support yourself and to create and get curious. And isn't it interesting that even our desires and dreams, they evolve and grow. What we want one moment then looks a little bit different the next. And we can continue to be responsive, which I think is one of, isn't that one of the great qualities in a friendship?
Mm-hmm.
With great, I've got somebody that I go to my friend and I'm really excited about this and that, and then maybe a week later I come back and say, you know, I've been doing some thinking and actually I want to shift directions 45 degrees. I'm going to go this direction. What did your friend say? Fantastic. Let's go for it. Great, you're even clearer.
Mm-hmm.
So nice and encouraging and supportive. Nice.
And stepping out of judgment and just allowing the flow.
Yeah. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the great keys to freedom and a great key to being connected is this drop in the judgment. When we notice the harshness, it's just noticing it and setting it aside and trading it for gentleness. Great. Let's move on to the next question. When do you set aside time for self-care? So really stepping into that question, when do you set aside time? Is it all the time? I know one of my good friends, some of you know her from the Inner Peace Immersion Retreat, Lisa Schrader. She's all about she's all about the feminine energy and supports people with sensuality and sexuality and sacred sexuality. And she is probably one of the queens of self-care. She's very in tune to it. It really isn't all the time, morning, noon, and night. It's, you know, the nurturing foods. It's wearing the fabrics that feel good. It's surrounding her environment with candles and fresh flowers and plants and being organized. It's doing things that really nurture her body, physically moving and dance and yoga and meditation and spending time with girlfriends. She's a really great example of somebody that really makes it a priority. She squeezes in some work also. But when do you set aside time for self-care? Is it in the morning? Is it in the evenings? Is it just a few times a week? So who'd be willing to jump in and share? When do you set aside time for self-care?
This is Michael.
Yeah, Michael.
I have the same two periods every day, 5 days a week.
Okay.
have for, say, self-care, and I've mentioned it on calls in the past, it's my bus ride to...
Oh, you just cut out for a minute. Either his phone went mute, or we dropped him. I think he was just about ready to describe that it's his bus ride to and from work, that his ride there, his ride back is really where he takes that time to whether read or meditate or take a nap, listen to an audio. So who else would jump in and share? When do you set aside time for self-care?
Hey, Mary, it's Stephanie.
Hey, Stephanie.
I used to do it a lot, and I just started back doing it. I get up half an hour earlier than my children do,
mm-hmm.
so that I can I have a cup of tea, and I try to really save that time just for a quiet time. Either I'll meditate or I'll write in my journal, but I try to make sure, you know, set that time aside so it's not that I'm, you know, doing housework or really just jumping into my day, but easing into my day and contemplating my day and connecting to my peace at that point.
Beautiful. Love it. And I find that's a big key, especially for those of you that have children. Really, really nice one. I mean, you've got to really plan your time free of distractions and responsibilities so that you can just allow that beingness of yourself to be connected with and responded to. Beautiful. Great. Anyone else want to chime in on that one? Well, and I'll just add here the couple ways that I set aside time for self-care. Always first thing in the morning, without fail, I take the time to make myself a vegetable smoothie. And even though it does require a little bit of time and preparation, it's really, it's as much the process of doing this for myself. I really allow myself to connect in that this is nurturing for me, giving myself the kind of nourishment that comes from those delicious vegetables all blended together with a vitamin C pack and protein powder and my parsley and cilantro and cucumber and red pepper, all kinds of goodies. Also, these days, I've got in a built-in self-care mechanism that's in the form of a 23-pound golden retriever puppy. He likes to go outside at least every couple, 2-3 hours. So he's forcing me to get self-care breaks now at least 2-3 times throughout the day. But I can take that time and either, okay, Cruiser, hurry up, finish up so we can get back to work, which I have to admit occasionally I have done, or I can go out and really allow my being to take in the fresh air, to take inventory of the golf course, that we overlook a golf course, take in the fresh flowers and the grass, you know, to delight in just the joy of puppy bouncing through the grass and his curiosity about life and everything. And a couple other keys, taking time for working out, so whether that's yoga or hitting to the gym, going for a walk on the path. And another self-care ritual generally comes for me at the end of the day. And when I go, I like to take my shower, and kind of my whole ritual in transitioning from the end of my day into my evening with my husband and cooking dinner and relaxing, sort of a way of kind of cleansing and just releasing all the energy from the day, is a time to really be present and care for myself there. So just a couple other ideas. So let's shift gears and talk a little bit about boundaries. This is a big topic, and so to talk a little bit about boundaries, and then I want to throw out a question to our live listening audience about what are the structures and boundaries that you have in place for you. And before we get to that, I really want to address, what does it really mean to have a boundary? Boundaries are imaginary lines that you draw around yourself to define the area that is necessary for you to fully express all of yourself. Without boundaries, there is typically not enough room for you to grow, or at best, you are stifled. Boundaries are about what others cannot do to you or around you, and how much what they do hinders your space. Boundaries are about the actions of others and those influences on you. We also create boundaries around time for our own well-being, to work out or meditate. So I want to make some key points about boundaries. Boundaries help us define us, who we are and who you are not. And you set boundaries by stopping your or others' behaviors. So, for example, somebody smoking in your home, that would be a boundary. If that feels like an infringement on your space, you don't thrive when somebody comes in and smokes in your space, or you wouldn't think that it would be okay for some friend to come in and take a bag full of garbage and dump it in your living room. Well, sometimes that's what happens when somebody comes into our home and dumps a whole bunch of negativity. You know, we get to really decide, is that okay? And what's that like for you? Can you thrive when that's occurring? Right? You get to extend boundaries by having courage. You get the courage from being attentive to yourself. So here's the thing about boundaries is we really want to notice when we're feeling at our best, when we're able to be fully expressed in who we are, kind of when our energy nosedives. I'll use one example here. When I started coaching in my early days, I used to just accept coaching appointments. Anytime somebody would want to coach, I'm like, okay, I'll do it. I'll be there. Somebody asked for a Saturday coaching appointment. I did that once, and it just felt like going way too much into my personal space. Okay, Saturdays doesn't feel good. I came to learn that if I coach any earlier than 8 a.m. in the morning, that doesn't work for me. I'm not at my best. Trust me, you don't want to be coaching with me at 7 a.m. Pacific time. A couple East Coast people, we tried that one time and that was all it took. It's like, okay, that doesn't work, right? I'm not at my best. And I also found, too, on the flip side, that taking a coaching appointment starting at 6 p.m. or later, that didn't work for me as well. So we've got to kind of begin to notice, that's just an example from a business boundary, what works? When are you at best? You need to set aside some time and space where it's uninterrupted time, where, you know, depending on your role, do you take phone calls 24 hours a day? Are there certain office hours? So Monday through Friday, certain hours. I've talked to some therapists who have certain clients, and they really come to put in certain boundaries in place when you can reach out to a client or from a client and when not. So it's really, really good to know kind of where those are. And here's the thing. When we have healthy boundaries, our fear diminishes significantly and trust is rarely an issue. Fears diminish significantly, trust is rarely an issue. And let me put this out. When somebody has a healthy boundary, you see example of, since I have a sleeping puppy here in my office, animals are great examples of putting boundaries in place, right? It's not okay to have puppies chew on things like shoes, furniture, right? So we want to really be clear and put that boundary in place that, oh no, this is not happening. Obviously certain things like potty in the house, not a good idea, right? We want to establish a boundary that that's an absolute no. And the thing is, I've learned this oh so well in the last few weeks, that when, you know, you can't put a boundary in by just, at least with a puppy, by just like, hey, don't do that. I don't like that. Hey, nobody takes that seriously. Whether you're a puppy or a human being or a child, it's like, no, I don't like that. But when you're really firm and clear, it doesn't mean you have to be screaming at the top of your lungs, but it really looks like clear and firm, this is an absolute no. There's a, here in my office, I have a little meditation table, and it's got a little, what do you call this, a little piece of fabric that's got some Om symbols on it, and it kind of hangs and dangles down, and was very enticing to my puppy the first few days, and I thought, oh my gosh, I could take this down, or every time that he went near it, I would put out a very firm no, right? And after about three or four times, he got really clear that, ah, that's off limits. Okay, she doesn't like that, staying away. Not an issue. And we're doing the same thing with shoes, with, you know, obviously, with the potty, chewing on the bedspread and that type of thing. But again, it's really being clear where the no's are. May seem, okay, well, puppies, one thing, but what about human beings? Aren't we all, we're all trainable. Like we get really clear what's okay to do around us, what's not okay. And for example, one of my colleagues who's a coach put out an email, gosh, this is now years ago, really requesting not to forward any kind of email that was like a video or one of the chain letters or, you know, just extra emails that would clutter up her inbox. So she put the request out and said, hey, I'm really trying to reduce the amount of email that I have to review, and would you please not send these kinds of emails? Great. That's like a firm boundary. She said it once. I love her. Want to support her. And great, so I don't do that. She is now doesn't have to deal with any extra email from me. And, you know, we have a strong relationship. And I have to say, I really respect and admire her for putting that rule down. And I think you'll find, if you begin to take inventory around where you see people putting in healthy boundaries, it could be, well, another example in coaching, I typically only coach Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, unless I'm traveling for some reason and I need to kind of accommodate a client or I need to jostle things around, generally don't coach any other days. Well, I certainly have never lost a client over, boy, you know, if you can't coach me at Fridays at noon, then I'm just not going to work with you. What do? They respect it, and they also learn that they can put boundaries in place and begin to take inventory of, you know, what's good for you, what's not good for you, what works for you. And people in general really want to support you thriving in a way that's really going to work. And sometimes we think, gosh, if I make a request, gosh, if I ask people to stop sending me, you know, certain emails, you know, are they going to hate me or think that I don't love them anymore? Actually, most people will respect you more for asking for a boundary. I don't appreciate it when you raise your voice in a certain tone of voice. That could be a request for a boundary. I actually put that one out with my husband. If he gets a little bit too aggressive in his tone of voice, and he's a passionate guy, so when he gets talking about a subject, it might not even be directed towards me, but just about a certain topic, I will make a request that I'm noticing your tone of voice is getting really intense. Can you speak in a different tone of voice? That's a boundary. And because of that, there is a nice, healthy respect within our relationship. So some examples there. And so with healthy boundaries, you're going to be growing more. You're going to be more just, you know, growing more both emotionally and developmentally. You're going to find that you have willing, healthy family members and true friends respecting you more. And here's the thing with weak boundaries. You're going to tend to attract needy, disrespectful people into your life. You're going to waste a lot of energy to keep life going. And there's often some urgent issue that you always have to deal with now. People with weak boundaries tend to also have a lot of drama that shows up because they're not really taking care of their personal space energetically. So in addition to all the self-care we've been talking about, when we don't have the boundaries, boundaries is sort of another up-level conversation with self-care. If we don't have those boundaries in place, again, we're going to attract neediness. We're going to attract people more that are pushing on that. Why? Because it's kind of what we're training them that, hey, yeah, you can call me at, you know, all times of the night, and you can, you know, you don't have to honor my agreements. So lots of talk here about boundaries. So let me just put out to our live listening audience if there's any questions. I see a few other people had joined the line here. So let's, for the conversation, what are the structures and boundaries that you have in place for you? So I know all of you have certain kind of boundaries that you put in place.
Hey, Mary, Stephanie?
Yeah, Stephanie.
One that comes to my mind most easily is with my kids. They have a set bedtime, and I really try to honor that because then that gives me some time in the evening to unwind and get prepared for the next day.
Nice.
Sometimes on the weekends, you know, and they don't have school, I'll be a little bit more lax, but during the week it's a very regimented boundary for them.
Nice. And I'll say, I bet for them, even if they give you a little bit of pushback, there's something about that boundary that creates a sense of safety. A lot of parents these days, and Stephanie, you may know this obviously since you're a parent, but there's some form of parenting that is emerging that's, oh, you know, just always, you know, give your kids what they want, let them stay up as late as they want, you know, it's harsh to put too many boundaries in place and so forth. But what we've seen happen as those kids have grown up without boundaries, they're actually they tend to be the ones more insecure, more, you know, causing problems and acting things out and not feeling that confident and secure. You give kids real boundaries. They may test those boundaries a lot, but it gives them a real sense of safety. It's like, I know where the walls are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We were even talking about this with the vet this weekend since, you know, we got a puppy, had to get his shots this weekend. And with kids, of course, kids and dogs, there's some similarities. And he was really saying that, you know, the more you put those boundaries in with your dogs, the happier and the more content he's actually going to be. And it doesn't mean you walk around with a, you know, box him in 24/7, but just good, healthy boundaries. Let them know who's in charge. You've got the space for them to thrive. Yeah. Anything else to add to that, Stephanie?
No, I definitely agree with what you said, and I've seen it as, you know, as my children have grown, that the more they know exactly what to expect, then there's less confusion, less ambiguity. You know, they have a whole routine: school, what happens after school. You know, when I'm working, what happens then? So there's a structure in place that allows them then to thrive.
Yep, exactly. Mm-hmm. Who else would chime in? Structures and boundaries that you have in place for you. And I'll throw in one more. Well, let me throw in a few more here. One of my big ones is actually around receiving phone calls. So I work out of my home office, and I actually generally only answer the phone when I've got a coaching call, an appointment, or when when I'm expecting somebody else, and I know somebody else is trying to get in touch with me. Or I really have the space to respond openly to that person in the moment. Just because I'm here in my office working and I don't have an appointment doesn't mean that anyone just has access to me and my time. There's a real boundary around that. So that's one. Couple others that people have mentioned is checking in with a question. You know, is this good for me? Is this the best choice for me? Like really always looking and taking that in, what, regardless of what it is, sort of a in-the-moment boundary. Another person always takes time, at least for a 15-minute break at lunch, to stretch and eat. So really putting some time around that. I'd say take that 15 minutes, maybe turn that into a half hour or an hour. Here's another interesting, you could call it a structure or a boundary that's in place, is working out through tax season. So this particular person is a tax accountant, and one of the structures that really supports him is absolutely working out day in, day out throughout tax season. Let's see, other boundaries? Here's another great one, is that friends and family can't call after 9 p.m. So you want to stay in touch. You want to be a source of support for friends and family. And this particular person had a limit that after 9 p.m. she didn't take calls. Another one night a week to be home alone with husband. Really great boundary structure to put in place. And this is another beautiful one. When someone's pain body is activated, I leave. So this is a great one, right? When you see somebody else that's really clearly disconnected from their power center, we've talked in a previous call about that metaphor of a vacuum cleaner plug being plugged into the wall, having a source of electricity. When it's really clear somebody is way disconnected and very activated, Eckhart Tolle refers to it as the pain body being very activated. This person chooses not to engage in, not to try and have the conversation, and leaves, removes himself from the situation instead of engaging. And one of my other clients was just telling me about how she had noticed that with her significant other, who had just recently started to drink again, that they weren't going to get into any kind of conversation if he'd even had one or two beers. So that became a boundary for intimate conversations, that after you see a pattern repeat itself and going down the spirally down corner, good idea to say no, nip it, and not engage. So, okay, let me put out here, I want to put out a challenge, and that is to identify three new commitments that you'd like to make around your self-care. Three new commitments to make around your self-care. Really take some time. You know, don't just list out the shoulds, but I really want you to emotionally connect, energetically connect with what commitments you're going to be making around self-care, so that you're really, really, really following through on that in the coming week. And check in with yourself. What is your self-care space like? Do you have enough of it? Do you need to claim more? One of my clients that I talked to today just got back together with her significant other, so they're in a brand new place. His father just recently passed away. They just in the middle of a big move. She's been having all kinds of technology problems, and so her life is on full tilt, overwhelm. And the commitment that she made today on the call was even to give herself a commitment of 10 minutes a day to really step aside and allow herself to connect back in just to that peaceful, prosperous place. And we agreed that even with everything that she's got going on, with as many as, you know, coaching 40 clients in a given week, she's a very busy coach, that she could commit to at least 10 minutes. Doesn't matter if it was sometime over lunch, if it was first thing in the morning, or if it was at 11 o'clock at night, she was going to claim those 10 minutes. So check in for yourself. What is your self-care space like? Do you have enough? Do you need to claim more? And I'm going to post an assessment in the Momentum Mastery Forum. It's an extreme self-care assessment. Let me say that one more time. It's an extreme self-care assessment and basically gives you 10 different areas to take inventory of around self-care. So categories around stress elimination, your environment, creating pleasure for yourself, health and emotional balance, special care items, support and experts. There's a category around appearance. There's one around indigestion. There's one around daily rituals and one around sustainability. So there's these 10 areas, and each one is going to have 10 items for you to really think through to give you ideas to up your level of self-care. So another place to help give you ideas for identifying three commitments around self-care. Okay, so as we are bringing this call to a close, let me just check in, see, do we have any questions around boundaries or self-care, anything that we've talked about here today? Let's just do a final checkout of what are you taking of value from today's call? What are you taking of value from today's call?
Hey, Mary, Stephanie.
Yeah, Stephanie.
For me, actually, another great call and actually very timely, because one thing that has shown up for me is that as I've done more of the, reevaluating my spirituality and connecting more with myself on that spiritual and emotional level, I've kind of let the physical fall to the wayside and really not doing exercise and engaging myself in that way. And I actually went to sign up for the gym today, and I went and I looked around and I left, and I came home later and did sign up. But it brought up, you know, what's going on with my mindset around that and really embracing it as part of the whole in taking care of myself.
Mm-hmm. Nice. A way to be back on the bandwagon.
Mm-hmm.
Our physical bodies love to move. They sure do. Sometimes I wonder, when I am working out, I wonder, how could I possibly be doing what I do in life without working out? And, you know, definitely for sure, I notice there's a little bit more mental and emotional toughness that comes when we don't have the physical piece in place.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyone else like to chime in? What are you taking of value from today's call?
Mary?
Yeah.
This is Cindy.
Hey, Cindy.
I was in my office earlier at my work, and I couldn't talk in there.
Oh, no problem.
But,
so what are you taking of value from today's call?
A lot of it is the same with Stephanie, especially with what I went through last year with my leg. It sort of messed my back all up because I was such a wimp with my leg and didn't take care of it the way I should have. It filtered into a worse thing, so just like Stephanie just said, a lot of it's my own physical body, because taking care of my physical body helps the mental part.
Absolutely.
Other than just concentrating on meditating and stuff, it's you know, taking care of my body. So
absolutely.
That's one of my three commitments of what you were saying for self-care is to, I've been going to physical therapy for my back. And I've noticed, I haven't done it every night, but whenever I do the stretches that they tell me to do before I go to sleep, I sleep better. And sleeping good is definitely a self-care thing. So my commitment is to do my exercises every night before I go to bed, my stretching exercises.
Really nice. Really nice. Good stretches. One of my other clients, too, brand new client that started today, we gave him an assignment around, because he really wanted to up his level of physical care as well. So two little things that we gave for him. One was exercising 5 days a week. So he committed to that. But the other thing around food, which is a great one if you really want to get honest with yourself and be able to take your level of nutrition to another level, is to take 2 weeks and for 2 weeks write down everything that you eat and literally write it down, how much you ate, so that you can really sit back and objectively look at what you're putting in your body. And as we begin to just be aware of, you know, how much sugar is going in, how much protein, how much processed food versus fresh vegetables, fruit, alcohol, dairy, you know, fats, all of that, we can really sit back and say, okay, in order for me to thrive, what really is my ideal food combination? And certainly this is a huge, huge passion of mine. It's been around health and nutrition for all these years. It's one of the things I don't even talk that much about. But I am doing a special call that you will actually be seeing something about very soon. So I'll just announce this here. But April 20th at 3 p.m. Pacific time, I'm doing a call with Gregory Ann Cox, who is with MidlifeWithAVengeance.com, and she is a super health expert. She's one of my clients, but is also somebody every time I'm talking on the phone have learned a lot from in the health department. So we're going to be hosting a call and really talking about all the ins and outs of health. So for those of you that also want to up your ante on the nutrition front as a way to support your self-care, that resource will be available to you. Okay, with that, we are going to wrap it up for tonight. I want to just thank all of you for your time and attention, and those of you that contributed to our conversation today. I always appreciate the contributions, and I just want to really acknowledge all of you for what you do share, because I know it adds a whole other level of depth to the calls. It really takes ideas and concepts and brings it home into, and makes it personal for people that are listening to this as a MP3 or as a CD, and even those that are just listening here on the line chiming in, really gives context. So I just want to thank and acknowledge all of you for your participation and invite those of you that are listening to join in our weekly calls. Our next call will be building upon this topic. It will be on April 26th at 5 p.m. Pacific. We're going to really be talking about another facet of self-care, and that is really around self-love and taking this relationship with ourselves even deeper, because when we can truly love ourselves at the deepest level, this is our, you know, it's our direct connection to source, our direct connection to our place of power. So with that, I wish you all an extreme self-care week, and we're looking forward to talking to you on the next call. All right. Bye, everyone.